Welcome back to Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. The independent bookstore Books & Co., located on the Upper East Side in New York City, right next to the former location of the Whitney Museum of American Arts, was a cultural landmark where visitors could often run into authors and celebrities. In her memoir, It's My Party, the store's owner, Jeanette Watson, granddaughter of IBM's Thomas J. Watson, writes about what led her to opening the famed bookstore and growing up as a Watson. She now practices healing touch and teaches laughing yoga. I want to talk to you about that.
I will.
Her memoir was published by Goldberg McDuffie Communications, Inc. Jeanette Watson, welcome to Midday.
I have to say one thing. It was Turtle Point Press.
Turtle Point Press.
Goldberg McDuffie was my publicist.
Oh, it's your... Well, they got free publicity for Goldberg McDuffie, but Turtle Point Press.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the lovely introduction.
Oh, you're welcome. Why did you decide to write your memoir now?
Well, it seemed like a good time. I was looking back and I thought, it's been pretty interesting. And also I was thinking I would like to write about my depression and be honest about what I had gone through, because most people didn't know that I was in a mental hospital twice and that I went through shock treatment. And I thought it might help other people who are struggling to know if you just hang in there a little bit, you know, things might improve and things are changing all the time.
Was it hard to write about those experiences? Those are very personal, raw experiences.
Well, you know, the worst thing was writing about when I was very young, when I was 12, and I had 2 years where I felt so depressed that there was nothing to look forward to every day. I mean, I hated school, I hated my family, I hated sports, I hated boys.
You hated everything.
I hated everything. I was so negative. And at night, I used to literally try to strangle myself. I was so depressed. And then that hurt too much, so I tried sitting out on the ledge of my bedroom window so I would get pneumonia and die. I thought that would be a very charming death. I could lie beautifully.
Right, they find you beautifully laying across the roof.
Exactly.
So when you were 12 years old, is that when you first feel like you were suffering from depression?
Yes, yes. And I wouldn't have even called it depression. It was only when I realized afterwards, you know, it's not really normal for a 12-year-old girl to lie down at night and try to kill or strangle herself. And I guess that was clinical depression.
Was there a triggering event?
You know, a couple of years before, my grandfather had died, and he was the one that I was closest to. So he was like a protective cape around me. And I was the favorite granddaughter. So coming from a family of 6 children and 5 girls, it was wonderful to be singled out and suddenly be that special little girl.
You write that in that beautiful way you described your grandfather, your protective cape. Those are the words you actually use in your book. Let's talk about your grandfather, Thomas J. Watson, who turned IBM into the powerhouse that we all know today. Clearly, you, as you just said, you were the favorite. What did you love about him so much, and how did you know you were the favorite?
Well, that is a good question. But everybody said I was the favorite. And he used to spend time with me, and he took me on a business trip by myself when I was 3. And we flew to Endicott, and I spent the night with him. And when my father retired, this ancient secretary came up to me and said, I remember when you came to Endicott with your grandfather, and he asked me to give you a bath. So I thought, you know, no man would ask his secretary to bathe his grandchild today.
Well, no. So did you realize... let me rephrase this. When did you realize, or when did it occur to you that your family was not like other families, that your family was extremely wealthy?
Yeah, I guess when I was I took my grandfather's house, the double townhouse, kind of for granted when I was a little girl. I thought everyone lived in a big house like that and had an elevator with red velvet seats that you pushed the button and went up in.
In your house.
Yes. It didn't, you know, you're three and you
right.
just, this is what you know. And then later on when I was at school, kids used to tease me and they'd say, Watson, you're so rich. You're so rich. And then I would go home and say, Daddy, kids say we're rich. And Daddy would say, oh, no, we're not rich. We have some money.
I love that sort of waspy understatement. So then, well, since you mentioned your father, you have this incredible relationship with your grandfather, clearly loving, adoring.
Yes.
What was your relationship with your mother and father like?
Well, sometimes I felt like I'd been born into the wrong family because everyone was very athletic in my family and outgoing, and I was so shy. And all I wanted to do was sit in my room and read and not talk to anybody. My father was wonderful in so many ways. He was adventurous, he was handsome, he was charming. Men and women both fell in love with him. I'm sure you would have too. He was just so charismatic. He was a leader of men. And but he was also, he had a terrible temper. And you never knew when that was going to happen. You know, I could be having a nice conversation with him, and then suddenly his whole demeanor would change. He said, what did you mean by that? And I'd think, uh-oh, what did I say that upset him?
Mm-hmm.
But in his memoir, he just says, you know, I would have been a great father because I did a lot of imaginative things with my kids, but I had a terrible temper. So it's really tragic.
Was that true, though? Was he imaginative? Was he...
Well, he
the way
did.
From your experience,
very imaginative.
Okay,
yes.
So he was. That was truthful.
Oh, he took us on great trips. You know, we went to Japan. We went to Israel. I went to Afghanistan later with him after I got divorced, and that was fabulous. He was really intrepid. I think it gave me my love of travel.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for the long silences after you said that I would have fallen in love with your dad. I've been like trying to find a picture of this dad.
Oh, he's very, was
Wait,
so
is
handsome.
That him right there?
Yes, but there's a better picture
oh,
of him.
But, I need to see this. So, okay, so.
But he was very charismatic. He would sit next to you and bring you out and talk to you. But he also had this manner of such strength that a lot of my friends were terrified of him.
Is it strength or was he stern? Because I understand he was very regimented. Like you had to get up very...
Yes.
I mean, 7:30 to me is not terribly early, but when you were a child...
Well, let's say you'd been out at a party until 4 o'clock the night before. How would you feel about that?
Wrecked. That's the way I would feel.
Yeah. It was... You know, I didn't mind that, but if, you know, after my coming out party, then I had to get up.
Right.
I cruelly had to get up.
Papa, really, stop speaking so loudly.
It was a tragic experience. Put me on the couch for a year.
Well, let's talk about you did get married. You first got married. When you first got married, you write about one of the worst periods of depression you've experienced.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I got married very young. And I got married for all the wrong reasons, because despite what people said about our money, I didn't personally have any. So I didn't know what I would do when I graduated. I had no skills. You know, I'd taken a lot of English classes at Sarah Lawrence. But then, you know, what would I do after college? So it's sort of, you know, a career. You get married, a ring by spring, or you get your tuition back.
A ring by spring. I've never heard that
yeah.
before.
Well, that's because women don't do it anymore. They don't get married till they're much older. So I got married. Then I moved to California, where I knew nobody, and I was pregnant. And I was terribly lonely because I had no one to talk to, and I had no inner resources to go join a library, to join a reading group, you know, things I would do now if I were put in a mm-hmm. strange city mm-hmm. or do volunteer work at a hospital. So anyway, and then after the baby was born, I just felt so tired. I couldn't get out. I thought the baby was going to be so much more than it would be. You know, a wonderful companion, right. Someone to, instead, you know, baby was adorable. I loved the baby, but the baby was something for me to take care of, not to, you know.
to talk to, have a conversation with someone could be a,
yeah.
You know, a vocal support. So your husband's name, your first husband was Ralph.
That's right.
In San Francisco, but then you moved to Grosse Pointe, Michigan.
Yeah, because I got depressed again. I'd been depressed once and I was put in a mental hospital and I had shock treatment and that pretty soon made me feel better. But then I got out and I had no support system. No one really thought that I should be maybe on medication mm-hmm. or having someone to talk to. And then when I got depressed again, Ralph took me to Grosse Pointe, Michigan, where he was from. And they found this hospital for me called Mercywood. There's a picture of it in the book. It looks like a scary kind of Alfred Hitchcock mm-hmm. Mental hospital. And I was there for 6 weeks. And mainly I remember just sleeping. You know, they wake me up in the morning, they'd attach the electrodes. I'd have the treatment, then I'd go back and sleep. I don't really remember much else.
Yeah, that's probably that's the big impact of those electric shock treatments. There's so much in this book, and we are running out of time, but let me bring you to the bookstore.
Yes.
Where did the idea come from to open up this bookstore?
I was about to have major surgery. It would take me on my hip, take me a year to recover. So I think it accelerated my thinking. And I had a dream that I was in a bookstore surrounded by books. And then I woke up and I thought, oh, maybe I could do that. You know, I love to read. I love to talk to people. And so eventually I was able to do it. And it was a wonderful 20 years.
And it became, as I said in the introduction, it was just this magnet.
It was
for
so much
authors
fun.
And stars. Why do you think that? Was it because it was next to the what used to be the Whitney and now the Met
well,
Brewer?
It had a great location. Also, the man that I started with, named Bert Britton, had amazing flair and a way to get publicity and knew everybody. So we were in People magazine, you know, we were in all the newspapers. They blew up our picture from People magazine and put it on a bus.
No, that's when you know you've arrived, when you're on the side of a bus.
I know, it's thrilling. I loved it.
And okay, so then the bookstore closes in 97. Is that the typical New York story? The landlord jacked up your rent and you had to go.
Yeah, and we also books were being sold at discount, and we carried a lot of small press books and books in translation from Europe that cost us a lot of money. So the expensive art books were now being bought at discount someplace else. So that's really what happened.
So then the bookstore closes. That's 97, which is, oh my God, that's 21 years ago now.
Yes.
Holy smokes. But now you are at... You're doing yoga. We got to talk about this laughing yoga.
Yes. Well, I heard about laughing yoga from a friend who was suffering with cancer and her doctor had prescribed it. So I went to the group and did laughing yoga and I thought, this is so great. I love to laugh. So then I took a 3-day course. So now I am a certified laughter leader.
Oh.
One of my proudest accomplishments. No PhD, but I am certified laughter.
So wait, what makes you a certified laughter leader?
Well, I went through
this 3-day course.
I did the elaborate. And then I lead laughter groups mm-hmm. in Maine. I work at the Lenox Hill Neighborhood House. They said, it's so nice you work with the older people. I said, ha, ha, ha. I'm older than a lot of the older people that are there.
Wait, so if I were in your laughing yoga class, what's the first thing I would have to do?
Well, we would have learn the chorus. So you go, ho, ho, ha, 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 but you're not doing it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, let's do it together. Ready?
Ho, ho, ha, ha, ha.
Ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. And how long do you do that?
And then you go, very good, yay. And then I go through, and there are a lot of exercises. They're not really funny, but they're an excuse. And people will start out very restrained and conservative. And by the end, they've totally relaxed. And laughing is so good for you. Mm-hmm. Boosts your endorphins. You're using all of your lungs, which we aren't using a lot of the time. You know, it reduces stress, brings out your leadership qualities.
Mm-hmm. So what is healing touch?
And healing touch
is separate from the laughing yoga.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Healing touch is working in your energy field or aura mm-hmm. that surrounds your body. And I can, you know, see it around people's fingertips or sometimes around their head. I can see.
You can see. Do I have one?
A beautiful yeah. one. It's blazing like the sun.
Right. But you can see the, what does
but
it?
But then you can feel it too. Uh-huh. And if we had more time, I could show you how you could feel your energy field. And so I work in the energy field. Have you heard of chakras?
Yes.
They're energy centers. So what I would do when someone comes in, I would test them, the chakras, with my pendulum.
Mm-hmm.
And after talking to them, and depending on what they said, I would do a specified treatment. But then I went beyond that and went to shaman school, Hogwarts, and I learned a lot of practices of the ancient Incans that retired up in a mountain and didn't really come out until the 60s or 70s. So it's a very pure mm-hmm. lineage. So that was interesting.
So between, excuse me, between healing touch, laughing yoga, or the bookstore that you had for 20 years, which one has been the most fulfilling?
You know, when I work with a client and they say they feel better, that's probably the most rewarding thing I've ever done.
I've been speaking with Jeanette Watson about her memoir, It's My Party. What a party. This has been fun. Thank you so much, Jeanette.
Thank you very much.